This is Liquidity Talks Live, the destination for updates, opinions, and insights from the world of treasury, liquidity, and risk. Join our host, Planic CEO and founder Neville Roberts, and our industry expert guest as we power up the liquidity conversation.
Hello and welcome to our latest installment of Liquidity Talks live stream and podcast, season 5, episode 4. I'm Neville Roberts. I'm the CEO and founder of Planix, the market-leading fintech focused on real-time treasury, liquidity, and risk. Now, our topic today is entitled Making AI Work in Treasury and Capital Markets. This is going to be a really great one. It's probably the most requested topic to discuss on a podcast. So welcome to our audience today. Good morning, afternoon, and evening, wherever you may be. Anyone in the audience can ask a question as we run through. If you put it in the comment section on the right-hand side of your screen, I can take some of these as we go. And if we're left at the end, we can answer them after the podcast. If you do ask a question, please let us know who you are, and if you can, your role, so we have some context to the question. Now, today I'm joined by our guest speaker, Chetan Joshi, who's the founder at Coglateral.ai. Chetan, good morning. Would you like to introduce yourself, tell us who you are and what you do?
Good morning. Thank you, Neville, for having me on. So I'm Chetan Joshi, founder of Coglateral.ai. So we are an AI business growth consultancy, so helping organizations get their head around the AI noise and moving into AI confidence. I've been working in capital markets for over 29 years now. So it started out in Wall Street banks, moving into from operations into technology, to consultancy, and helping out front office teams. So I call that part of my career that kind of human robot days, and I'm looking forward to the conversation.
Indeed. And we're going to put your email in the comments section. So if anyone does want to contact you afterwards, we'll make it easy for them. Now, I do start off these podcasts, as everyone knows, just touching on my favourite topic, which is actually football. And now, I believe you're actually a Watford fan, and partially or first and foremost Liverpool fan. So do tell us more.
Yes. So I started out as a Liverpool fan. You know, my parents came over in the 70s, and I was, you know, first generation here. And it was the team that was the team that was winning. So I was following them for many years. And then my son was born, and about, you know, 16 years ago, moved to Watford, and Watford's at my team now. So that's
very good. And the best thing to ever come out of Watford, well, I'm sure we'll agree, is John Barnes, right?
100%.
Yeah. Right. For everyone on the podcast today, we're going to have a special prize draw. So if you just look behind Chetan's right ear, you see a book. This is his new book. If anyone who's on the podcast, if you want to put your name in the comment section or just a yes or any comment whatsoever, or just a one, we'll enter your name into a draw for Chetan's new book. And very briefly, Chetan, do you just want to briefly introduce it and tell us where you can buy it as well from?
Yeah, sure. So the book was put together, you know, a couple of years ago when I pivoted from management consultancy into AI to become a product director. And there's nothing out there around frameworks and understanding. So I've used the last 2 years working the front line of AI in capital markets and treasury to help people go from what I call AI noise to AI confidence. It's called the Vertical AI Autobot. And it's an area that I'm going to talk about today around what is vertical AI, but also the Autobot is 7 steps to go from an idea into a production from your AI perspective. So I'm looking to more educate people, and that's why I'm keen to talk today to you and your community.
Perfect. And the barcode top left if you want to have a look at the book or buy the book. So it's really all about, it's about how you think about AI from strategy to actually using it. It's not just rush in and try some AI. It's thinking it through carefully so you get it right from the start. Is that a fair characteristic of the book?
That's correct. So, you know, everyone wants to do stuff in AI, but in the last 2 years working with, you know, corporates and fintechs, I've seen, you know, the mistakes people make, you know, the key questions you need to get at the front from the business around clarity. And then what form of AI do you use? There's so much confusion around AI that everyone thinks there's just one type of AI, but there is 2 types of AI, and I'll go through that. So it's just sharing those examples and those giving those questions at each of those chapters to then help you get to a point where you get to a blueprint, and then you can work with your technology teams.
Perfect. Understand. So look, let's start the conversation with, you know, where is AI actually delivering measurable value in treasury and capital markets today?
Yeah, sure. So the where AI is now positioned, which is really at the heart of the treasury capital markets, is really embedded as an augmented AI. And what I mean by that, I think it might be worthwhile just firstly explaining what vertical AI means, because everyone, when they talk about AI, they think about generative AI. And the way I explain it is, if you've got two babies, that the first baby, you train it on mathematics, English, arts, human emotions. So it grows up to become a mini jack of all trades. And it's been trained to always generate an answer. And that answer might not be correct, but that's the way it's been trained. Now, the second baby is only trained on mathematics, pure maths. So it knows right from wrong, and it's always subservient to the human. So it's more scientific, whereas the first baby is artistic. And the first baby is generative AI, and it has a place in our industry around brainstorming, MVPs. And vertical AI is the second baby, which is really focused on your domain, treasury and capital market. And what I've seen is banks and hedge funds integrate vertical AI safely into their capital markets and treasury process. And that's looking at liquidity decisions, that's looking at funding, that's looking at taking information from emails around, for example, margin calls, and making sure that is booked into the relevant systems, where you're now moving humans from looking at mundane repetitive tasks to actually looking at true exception management. That's been the holy grail for us operational managers. You want to get your team just looking at the exception and using the AI as a partner, as opposed to removing tasks and jobs.
Got it. So look, it sounds like AI, it's not just an automation tool, right? I think that's where it started from, or that's the thrust. And I think a lot of people still think that's what it's there for, but it's more about operation intelligence, decision support capability with a human as well. Is that fair?
That's fair. So when you look at AI and the three, they come at three benefits, and you touched on it completely. The first one, I call it ACI, automation. So it's all about automation. And historically, we had robotic process automation. We had macros. We had all that rule-based technology, which was great at that time, but it had a ceiling and it couldn't scale. Now with AI, it has the ability to scale. So when regulators ask for a field, or there's more requirements coming in from customers, you don't have to go burn calories building that technology. So you straight out of the box, you get automation. And what I mean by that is you can get up to 80%, 90% straight through processing with AI embedded into your process. The second area is control. So now you're achieving control in your processes around payments and settlements. And with regulations moving, I think, to T0 in the future, T1 recently, again, you've got that control around payments, et cetera. And the last area is intelligence. So the AI models take a couple of months to train up and start to bring in what we call insights that help your decision-making from a human perspective. So intelligence is obviously the end goal that you want to achieve with your AI.
Got it. So it's a maturity, not just on the technology side, but how we use it and how we think about it too is what I've read into that. So got it. Right. So look, if we focus on probably the question we get asked the most, funding optimization, what decisions are being improved, and also how do you prove it as well?
Sure. So one of the key areas that's been solved in the vertical AI space is around optimization. And there are, there's two types of optimization when you're looking at it from a collateral perspective. You've got the asset optimization and you've got the margin optimization. And what I mean by asset is, what is the cheapest to deliver? What's the best to recall? But now the AI has the ability to run all those different permutations, but also with treasury teams, they have so much data. With AI loves data, and it loves data in the sense that it can be unstructured or structured. So historically, you had to get data into certain formats for technology systems to upload. Now the AI can take the data the way it is, unstructured, and then it can allow you to make a quick decisions around funding and looking at your kind of forecasting, what type of collateral is maturing. And now that's coming to the dashboard within seconds, whereas historically it was very slow for the collateral system or the settlement systems to load back into your kind of optimization engine. So that is one of the key things I'm seeing in that side of things. Also intraday funding as well. So with intraday funding, as it says on the name of the tier, it's intraday, you need to move very quickly. So now AI is allowing you to make those movements much more faster, but also controlling the settlement instructions as well, because that's been a big pain point, and the industry's tried so many times to solve that problem with number of utilities. But again, AI is now helping you solve the intelligence around settlement structures and payments as well.
Got it. So just a reminder as well, if you do want a signed copy, I'm just going to put that in, of Chetan's book, put a comment, just put anything, your name or any comments at all, or even just a one or an X in the comment section, and then we'll put you in the draw for that book. So one extremely hot topic that we get asked about and to talk about is liquidity forecasting, kind of across the board. So what's the difference in your mind between pilot forecast model and a production grade one? Because I think that's an important concept we have to understand and difference.
Yeah, so with vertical AI, the input part of the process is really important. So you want to get in that kind of AI pilot, you want to get a true sample of your whole population that you're looking at from a forecasting perspective. So it's the sweet spot is around 100 to 150 samples in that input. So now the AI has that input. The human would help the AI learn the training around what they need to look for, what kind of steps, what are the kind of forecasting measurements, the parameters around what you're forecasting, and how much do you want to stress potentially your collateral, your funding. So now that's the process. And then the output, it's providing the AI, what does good look like? So once the AI gets the input and the output, it works out the magic. It breaks everything down into tokens. So AI, as most people know, it's broken down by tokens. So it looks at languages and mathematics in a different way than the human does. And then it rebuilds that information, and then it allows you to then forecast it and have the accuracy that you want. So from an accuracy perspective, you obviously want to get to the highest point, but confidence will always be 100%, because the AI is providing the output for the human to validate. And there's... Yep. What's really important with vertical AI is the human in the loop. So the AI is not just generating and hallucinating like generative AI does. And that's where I see AI pilots fail, because they're using the wrong form of AI. Whereas with vertical, it's always checking with mummy and daddy, does it look right before it actually progresses? So your forecasting confidence goes up to 100%.
Got it. And so, it's not just about the pilot, right? I think what we've talked about previously, your book, the how you help customers, it's thinking through every step. So rather than I'll use a large language model, I'll apply that and I'll be fine. It's strategy, models, pilots, how do I make that successful? Make sure I understand any potential points of failure all the way through to production grade. It's the whole concept, right, from start to finish.
That's right. There is, Neville, there's so many players in the mix right now. And when I talk to banks and hedge funds, they have a long list of AI projects they want to do. But the challenge is that you are going to use internal technology team, and that's a given. And the internal technology team will get there, but they're going to burn calories, make mistakes. And there was always this debate about build versus buy. But now what I'm seeing is build versus buy versus partner. So partnering with an AI firm that has a model already in place. It's not about having the winners in this space aren't going to be the ones that have the largest models. It's the ones that integrate AI safely and allowing the human to make better decisions. And to do that, you need a framework, and you need a team that can connect the business, the technology teams, internal, external. What I recently saw it was in March, HSBC announced that their chief AI officer was the former COO of the corporate investment bank, which is a really smart move, because AI is owned, in my opinion, by the business, because they're the ones that are in that pain point. They're looking at AI to automate, improve controls and get intelligence. So it's just having that framework that can guide people to safely integrate AI.
I've got it. And so, look, in your opinion, why do so many AI initiatives stall or fail after the pilot phase? What are the two top failures that you've seen, or what tends to happen?
Sure. So I think there's this big rush to get the pilot up and running very quickly. So firstly, they don't have enough data and variation. So to the earlier point, when you're creating that sample set of 100 or 150 input files, those files should be a true representation of all the different permutations that you've seen in the past. So your best case, your worst case, your kind of medium case scenario. So they're not having enough training into the model. Now, once you figure out what you want to automate, you've got to unravel all that data. So where are you getting all the data? Sometimes they don't collect all the data from all the different data sources. So that's another challenge that I see, is that, you know, they're very quick to get the AI out there. Because they see it in their personal life, that the AI does it so quickly, why can't they see it in their corporate life, in their working environment? And then it's also about training it as well. So what happens is people do really well at the beginning of the pilot, and the accuracy and the STP is really high. But if they don't continue to keep on training the model, it starts to go back down again, and it starts to fail. And then they say AI doesn't work, and they throw the baby out of the bathwater. But because they haven't structured it correctly, they haven't trained the model enough, but they also haven't optimized it. So within AI, there are parameters you can move to optimize the output. So again, it's just that understanding and that guidance. So that autopilot stage is so important. And also sometimes you don't need AI. So it's such a big buzzword, and there's a fear, I need AI. Actually, you just need some smart automation. So that as well in the mix.
And is it fair to say that, you know, many AI initiatives, they fail, it's not because of the models themselves, but it's because of, it's like, you know, weakness in their operating models, choosing the wrong AI, or just trying to throw AI at the wall, hope it sticks. But thinking about it all the way through, it's not just the model.
No, it's not the model. It's like you rightly said, it's the governance around the model. So you build the model, but where is it going to sit in operations or in front office or in risk or in treasury teams? Were those teams part of the process? Sometimes you have people working on their own trying to solve these problems, and then it gets landed on their desk, and then you've got the politics between the tech and the business. And so there's no real buy-in. So you really need to get the people right at the beginning in a kind of a workshop, in a kickoff, where you're all discussing together and you're moving the right governance, decision-making, and the policies around it. So there's also a lot of policy that you need around the AI, what it can do, how you can override it, because you want it to run for very closely monitored by humans. And the problem is that people don't always use vertical AI. They use generative AI because, you know, they're talking to, you know, Microsoft, to Google, you know, you've got Copilot, you've got Gemini, and they get confused that, why can't this do? And it's an amazing engineering field. I'm not sort of trashing it. I use those tools for other use cases. But I think it's just that education, and there's just so much noise. And people just want to rush to get to their pilot outlet, and the business gets frustrated by it.
Got it. And look, in the end, production grade AI, it's not just a model, it's an operational system or platform to help you improve, right? You just can't think about it as a model per se. It's a lot more than that.
Yeah, exactly. And I've seen the future. So I've seen these production grade AI technologies in banks, where, you know, a bank started in 2019, and they've now got over 20 different AI agents. Hedge funds started with one, they've got now two. And it was my advice is always start with one simple problem where you're burning so many calories on that process. You could then just give it a real tight focus and get the metrics that you want. Do you want over 90% STP? Do you want 100% confidence in your output? What is those metrics? And just run that, and it'll take you like 90 days from start to finish, from an idea in your head to actually get it into production. But there's also the challenge is also around, where do you build and deploy the AI? So do you want it on-prem? Because obviously data security is so important. Do you want it in the cloud? You know, do you want it to be outsourced by someone else? So there are all these IT decisions and compliance and security as well that people forget about. And then that's why it doesn't go to production, because those players weren't involved again in the process. And then, there's a committee and the red tape, and it just sort of...
Holistic approach. We have a question here from Sandeep Jain, and it says, how can AI help to automate capital and liquidity stress testing? For example, impact on business model if there's a stagflation and interest rate rise? What will my balance sheet and P&L look like? And what management actions can I take to mitigate the stress?
Sure. With that use case, obviously there's a number of inputs that you would have in that process. So the AI would consume all those inputs in a very efficient way. So does it just need to extract? Once it extracts that data, does it need to multiply and add and subtract to get to those ratios, to those calculations? And then it can work out what's the output, where does it need to go to a management from a dashboard? So that is a use case that I've seen banks and hedge funds deal with. So it is possible to do that through vertical AI.
Got it. Okay, so look, let's move on. We touched briefly about data. It's the most important input, I think. What does good enough look like for treasury and AI, and what's non-negotiable? You know, how clean does it have to be? How real time does it have to be as well? What's you know, what's important?
Sure. So with the data, the strength with AI now is you can consume it in an unstructured way. So it doesn't matter what shape and sizes that data is, which is great because you're getting all this data from, you know, central banks, from internal teams, from external regulators, etc., from websites. So AI has the ability to scrape websites, has the ability to take data from different file locations. So you don't have to worry now about where the data is. You just need to know where is that input data. So once you've got that information, it's then using the technology to kind of really speed up decisions that you normally would make. So what is that? What is, the non-negotiables are around like legal data. So the haircuts, you know, the what's eligible. You know, there are certain policies and parameters you have to comply by. So making sure those regulatory requirements are non-negotiable. And then providing those calculations, and then you are able to stress it as much as you want, because once it has that data, you can interrogate it and you can run. And what's also happening is that you start off with vertical AI first to build the accuracy and the confidence in your AI agent. Then you bring in generative AI on top of it. Now you've got the two models working together, and that's a new trend right now. And that's why you can start to ask more questions. And then that generative AI you can deploy internally to all your different teams. They can ask questions about, you know, what was my highest move? What if I stress this collateral, what would happen? So you can ask more questions because the generative is talking to your vertical AI model. And that's where the market is now moving towards. It's using the best of both models.
Okay, if we move on from data to a topic we get asked about a lot, which is model risk and explainability. So, you know, how do you make AI acceptable to risk audit regulators? From a software company's point of view, we get asked, the bank, they need us to explain how it works and how you get the outcomes. We don't want to tell them because it's our secret source. We don't want it copied. So how do you get over that problem and make it acceptable to a bank's risk department and audit and ultimately the regulator?
Yeah, sure. So firstly, the models are deployed on site. So the software provider doesn't have access to the production grade AI that is built. So it builds it outside in the sandbox or in their environment. It's used with, you know, sanitized test data to prove that it can achieve what it needs to. But once it's deployed, it's in the client's organization. But then you also have the ability to show the traceability of what is mapped to what field. So you might not give away the secret source and how the AI works and maps it all, but there is always a full audit and traceability of every field from input to output. So you can always go back to, you know, internal model risk governance committees to say, this is how the model was put together. This is the type of AI we've used. These are the scenarios that we've run. So they can also then just test that it's independently, you know, validated. And then you can also have the traceability to the regulators. Say, if you want another field, this is how we would do it. So, but it's also a very new area as well. And, you know, the firms that I've seen use this with you know, banks since, you know, the first bank that went on to vertical AI was in 2018, a Japanese bank, then a UK bank in 2019. And they've been audited every year and they passed all those audits. Right. So it is possible. There's just certain ways and steps you need to go through from the model governance perspective.
Okay, great. Now, and once again to everyone on today, if you do want to be in the raffle to win Chetan's book, which is just behind his right ear, if you just put a comment in the comment section on the right hand side, just your name or hello, 1X, doesn't matter, we'll put you into the draw. So moving on, we haven't got that long left. Ownership, right? In terms of operating model, in your view, who should own AI in Treasury? Is it Treasury? Is it risk? Is it IT? Is it central AI function? Is that maturing? So it's moving over time now. It's becoming more prevalent.
Yeah, it is more the latter is moving. So pretty much every organization now has an AI committee, which is, you know, fundamentally run by, you know, the technology CTO areas, the tech areas. And obviously the business stakeholders have a play on what they want there. But the shift is now, as I said, with it, like for example, HSBC, it's now owned, should be owned by the business. The that Treasury should own the AI roadmap, the strategic plan. And technology is obviously just the enabler for Treasury. So Treasury would have the budget. Treasury should have the decision making to say, this is the AI I want to use. This is how I want it to be integrated into all my systems, all my platforms. So that's what I see it more of a business decision. That's why, because the business is the one that's at the forefront of it all. And the technology team is just kind of a supporting partner in that sense. So obviously the tech is very complicated, and that's where their strength comes in. But actually the business owns it from start to finish to get the output, to get the accuracy to the levels that the business wants.
And do you think AI, from an IT point of view, you should have the AI development or running the models, and the models, is that within the like Treasury IT, or is a central IT team? How would you see that being organized?
Yeah, so I think there has to be a central oversight of all the different AI models, because every different area are using different parts of it, and there are some really good synergies that, if you look at it from a central perspective, the worry I have is you've got all these different silo technology teams building all these different AI solutions, and you're giving away a lot of your data. So data is obviously really important, and there's a lot of confusion when you give your data to these organizations and then making sure it's all centralized and controlled. So you want it as a central team. So each Treasury team or capital markets team would have a dedicated tech team that is following the strategic view of the CTO or that at the highest level. So I think it's centrally governed, but then independently validated by the relevant tech teams.
Okay, so let's move on to, you've gone through a successful pilot, it works. How do you move from pilot to production? The sense that without creating new risk or operational fragility, how do you transition?
Yeah, there is this a parallel run that you would run, you go live with your AI agent. You still have humans that monitoring it, the output, and sort of having the guardrails, so reducing the STP because you still want it to go to a human. But once you start to get confidence, it also really challenges the way humans think, because we've been trained to do things in a certain way. Yeah. Our predecessors and their predecessors, and they're all humans. Whereas now the machine has much more superpower intelligence to actually challenge the way we were thinking about things. So there is that hand-holding with the human. That's where you've got the human in the loop. That's really important to have. And then the production output and the results you'll see, and then you have more confidence to really invest in it and add more parameters. So start off with this is my metric. I want over 70% STP, tick. Now let's look at the edge cases, because AI can't do everything. So you still need humans to solve the edge cases, and then train the model, and then you increase 80% to 90%, and you slowly move it into production with the right owners and the governance around it.
Got it. Unfortunately, we're running out of time. So one last final question. So always my last one. But if you had one key takeaway to tell the audience today, what would it be? And ultimately, next week, how would they move from AI experimentation into real treasury value? What's the one thing you tell them?
So I think the one thing I would tell them is to look at integrating vertical AI systems into their roadmap. Look at having a vertical AI architecture where the human is in the loop, which allows you to safely integrate your AI, which then helps operational intelligence.
Right. And it's don't just start with AI. I think a theme came through, start with a treasury decision. It could be expensive, slow, noisy, hard to scale. Focus on that and don't try and boil the ocean, right?
Just one use case, and that you can measure successful, and then build that momentum to then bring in more use cases.
Right, got it. Perfect. I have about another 30 questions for you, Chetan, so we might have to extend this into some more podcasts in the future as AI matures and we're seeing the impact it has. But unfortunately, we do have no more time today. So thank you very much for joining us today, Chetan, and sharing your views. If anyone asks questions after the event, then we will answer them for you later. we will do the raffle for the book after the podcast. So that concludes our latest Liquidity Talks live stream and podcast today. We'll be putting the podcast on LinkedIn, Spotify, Apple Music, and other media outlets and streaming services very soon. Thank you very much. Look out for our next podcast next month. My name's Neville Roberts. Thank you for tuning in and goodbye.
You've been listening to Liquidity Talks. Don't forget to subscribe to stay updated on the latest developments and industry opinion from the world of treasury, liquidity, and risk.